Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John, and today we have another lesson from CEDH. CEDH is a metagame within the Commander format that sits at one extreme with highly consistent, highly efficient decks. Not all cards are equally powerful in all formats, or even in all metagames, but there are lessons to be learned from how players are brewing some of the most powerful cards in Magic's history. Today, we're going to be doing a little bit of practice what we preach, and we're going to be using a deck I built using lessons from CEDH to try to illustrate a concept that I find really helpful when I'm playing a game of Commander. And this is now like the seventh time that I've tried to record this, but I keep finding issues with the script, and I keep thinking I can just tweak it in post, and then I keep finding more issues with how I organize the script in the first place. So I kept coming back, rewriting, re-scripting, re-recording, finding even more issues. So I guess here's to hoping that seventh time's the charm.
And little did John know that his recording setup for video was actually completely borked. That's right, webcam on, recording. No usable footage. This is why you must endure a video with static images and funny pictures.
Preamble out of the way, let me just say thank you once again for joining us. If you're enjoying this or any of our other episodes, please, if you feel you've earned it, give us a like, subscribe, leave us a comment on YouTube. You can also find us on Twitter, where we are at GemstoneMindMTG, or you can send us an email, gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com. With that out of the way, let's get started. We're going to talk about a concept that I want to call crowd control for now, at least until I can think of a better way to describe it. Crowd control describes how you can set multiple opponents back with the same game action. A classic example would be a Stax piece like Drannith Magistrate. Cast one card, deny three opponents their commanders, and potentially take them off their primary game plans. Looking for cards that say opponents, or each opponent, or each turn, or similar phrasing is kind of Commander Card Evaluation 101 for a reason. And we've talked about the concept of the action economy before, and you can consider this concept to be an extension of that idea. But we have a lot of other scenarios where we can indirectly deny our opponents' actions, which we're going to see throughout the course of this episode. And the reason that I'm discussing this is that it actually built out of several ideas that Rebel Sun, notable CAG member, tournament grinder, and Jeggy enthusiast, described in her series of videos on Commander School. We'll be using a decidedly non-CDH deck to illustrate how to apply these concepts to a game of casual Commander, and how you can build a deck meant for classic battlecruiser games of Commander, with the understandings that we can glean from CEDH. Let's start with the concept called cornering. Cornering is the idea that you're going to incrementally remove your opponent's options in a game of Commander. Rebel described cornering in her video, which I'm going to link in the description. You may play Stax pieces, or you may have board presence and card choices which limit the actions your opponents can take, allowing you to dictate which actions they can take. And that's kind of the important part. Let's have an example. Let's assume that we're playing against an opponent who controls a 1-3 Thrasios, a 1-1 Esper Sentinel, and a Timna, a 2-2 for 1, a white, and a black. And we attack with one of our partner commanders, Arden Intrepid Archaeologist, a mono-white partner commander getting more attention in CDH circles because of his triggered ability, which cheats on the mana cost of equips. Now, we'll talk more about the role of Arden's triggered ability shortly, but for now, he's going in unarmed. Our opponent has a number of different options, and it can be hard to predict if they'll just block our commander with Thrasios, or if they'll double block, or they'll chump block, or they'll just take the damage. It's a little hard to be sure because they have so many options open to them. So, to begin cornering our opponent, we're going to change the scenario now, and we're going to assume that in addition to Arden, we control our partner, Falthus, Shadowcat Familiar, who, in addition to being named after the single best member of the X-Men, also grants Arden Menace and Death Touch. Though I guess a much better tribute to Kitty Pryde would be if you actually grant it unblockable, but... anyway, this single change means that our opponent now has a drastically reduced range of options where they can block favorably. If they want to prevent Arden from connecting, they will be losing at least two creatures. If they want to remove Arden, they're no longer trading one for one, but they'll be two for one-ing themselves. At least one of their commanders dies if they block. Now we come back around to Arden's triggered ability. At the beginning of combat on your turn, you may attach any number of auras and equipment you control to target permanent or player. So let's add on a Sword of Fire and Ice, making Arden a 4-4 who relevantly has protection from blue and red. Now Thrasios can't legally block Arden, and when combined with Menace, our opponent still needs to block with at least two creatures if they want to block at all. Our opponent's many different options have been boiled down to a simple binary choice. Will they double block with the Sentinel and Timna, losing both in the process and leaving Arden alive? Or will they let Arden connect? Our opponent has been cornered by our board presence, and what was once an array of options to interact with our combat step has been turned into a binary by our card choices. Rebel's video is excellent because it goes on to talk about how cornering an opponent limits not only our opponent's choices, but it also gives us the ability to better predict which options our opponents will take. Continuing with our example of Arden wielding a Sword of Fire and Ice, while buddied up with Falthus, we know what blockers on board our opponents can choose from, and we can probably predict that they won't be willing to give up two huge card advantage engines in Timna and Esper Sentinel early on, so we can probably count on Arden connecting. Further, we can pare down the number of pieces of interaction that they can possibly use to interact with our combat step. Protection from red means we won't be seeing a burn spell come down to take our commander out, but a white removal spell like Swords to Plowshares is still a very valid piece of interaction for us to consider. This means we can prioritize other parts of our turn to develop our board and sculpt a hand which protects against those eventualities, allowing us to develop a plan which interacts with their likely plans. If our opponents are staring down a commander with protection from multiple colors, let alone two commanders with protection from multiple colors, they may decide that rather than spend pieces of interaction to remove the equipment and then to remove the commander, it's more efficient to just wipe the board. Or we may force them to play out a creature who can allow them to block at all when their life totals get low enough. Once we have our opponent cornered, the next step in crowd control is to limit our opponent's chance to break out of the corner. And Rebel describes this as applying pressure, or in other words, putting an opponent on the clock. As an opponent's life total drops closer to zero, they're closer to elimination, and the number of chances they'll get to find an answer gets smaller and smaller. Voltron-style commanders are better at applying this kind of pressure than most other combat-focused creatures, since they only need to apply 21 damage to score an elimination. And this is actually why the deck I'm using in the extended example in this episode features Arden and Falthus. When combined, these partners' abilities complement one another very well and create a number of potential board states where we are comfortable applying direct pressure to two different opponents with two different commanders who each represent a reasonable clock. With a Sword of X and Y, either one of our 2/2s with Menace and Death Touch become 4/4s with Menace and Death Touch and protection from two colors worth of blockers. There's an argument to be made that maybe Armix Filigree Thrasher is just a better choice of partner for Arden because Armix also provides removal in the command zone, but only Falthus gives us the option to go double dragon on our opponents and threaten two different opponents with Voltron damage. Arden provides better removal, but doesn't provide Arden with the evasion he really needs to be effective as a Voltron commander. Two Voltrons are better at crowd control than one. A cornered opponent with 40 life and 0 commander damage has many more options than a cornered opponent with 25 life and 15 commander damage. The former is probably relieved to top deck a Rhystic Study, while the latter is probably wishing they just top decked their Cyclonic Rift instead. Equipment is seeing renewed interest in CDH thanks to Arden, and credit is due to brewers like Sakira from Who Brewed This and Callahan from the Mind Sculptors for their work on Naya Hipster Stacks and both Jeskai and Esper Stoneblade respectively. These are Arden brews that have been proving themselves in CDH gameplay. Many of the best pieces of equipment in Commander allow for repeatable forms of card advantage that these CDH decks explore, the Swords of X and Y cycle just being the poster children for this, but I'd also like to point to Umezawa's Jitte as another powerhouse at picking off small utility creatures. A well-built package of equipment in a deck that hopes to corner opponents through combat step can really grind out a lot of value. I'm going to use Sword of Fire and Ice as we talk about another concept from Rebel Sun's Commander School. Sticky interaction. Sword of Fire and Ice allows us to draw a card whenever the equipped creature connects with an opponent. And like any responsible Orzhov player, we can potentially draw into lots of good interaction. Swords to Plowshares, Dam, D-Spark, Leave No Trace, Zealous Persecution, Path to Exile, Soul Partition, tons of ways to get rid of creatures who are getting in between us and victory. And our opponents may decide to try to get out of their predicament by playing more creatures than we have removal, buying time until they can find an answer. Breville describes stickiness as how hard or easy it is for your opponents to pressure you to spend the interaction in your hand. Sword of Fire and Ice also gives us 2 damage whenever we connect, allowing us to pick off utility creatures or would-be trump blockers. Going back to our example of our opponent who controls Thrasios, Timna, and Esper Sentinel, we could use our trigger from Ardent connecting with Sword of Fire and Ice to pick off that Esper Sentinel, meaning that our opponent needs to have another legal blocker out on their turn to have any chance of blocking Ardent. We've put them behind, and we're forcing them to react to our game actions. And we can just keep that Swords of Plowshares that we just drew off of the combat damage trigger for later, if things get really dicey. In a deck that's meant to grind, we want to be able to take game actions without going down on cards in hand. This is a form of virtual card advantage which we can use to incrementally apply even more pressure to our opponents, and eventually overwhelm them. I'll post a link to the decklist for Ardent and Falthus in the description of this episode, which really started out as an exercise of how much value can I really squeeze out of Death Touch, and wound up being more of an exercise in trying to apply this concept of crowd control, dovetailing off of Rebel Sun's concepts of cornering, pressure, and stickiness, to create a deck that can assert its game plan without needing to spend tons of cards from its hand to do so. Falthus wound up creating a very unique and very synergistic relationship with Ardent, and the combination of menace and protection proved to be an exceptionally difficult set of abilities for opponents to block successfully. I wound up leaning pretty heavily into the combat step as the value engine for the deck and the primary source of pressure, and this creates a fairly unique game plan where we can have 2 evasive commanders who can fairly easily put opponents on the clock while also grinding out card advantage and applying pressure with no real need for additional mana or card investment beyond the initial equipment package. Most of the games where this deck has been successful have included each of these partners putting a different opponent on the clock with commander damage while using triggers from equipment to stay ahead of the third opponent who's just having their life total chiseled down by other creatures. And quite honestly, it's been a lot of fun. I've been able to apply some really interesting theories from CDH right to a Battlecruiser style deck, and you don't get much more Battlecruiser than good old-fashioned Voltron damage. So that about wraps it up for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, feel free to give us a like or subscribe. If you got questions, you can ask down in the comments on YouTube. You can add us on Twitter, where we are at GemstoneMindMTG, or you can send us an email, gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm John, and this is Gemstone Mine.